and knock on our door.
Come knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's company too. Come and dance on our floor.
Come and dance on our floor.
Thank you for knocking on our door and welcome to the Regal Beagle Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the much-loved television sitcom Three's Company. Here we review and discuss each and every Three's Company episode, covering all 8 seasons in chronological order. My name is Danko Jones, and joining me today is my good friend Kieran Grant. Kieran, how are you doing today?
I am splendid. I am so happy to be with you down on this rendezvous, Danko.
You are a big Three's Company fan.
I grew up on it.
Yes.
I really did.
And after you were grown up, all growed up, did you continue to watch it?
Yes. I was thinking about this actually the other day. I'd say like my peak viewing period would have been when it was syndicated reruns around 83, 84. But it probably was still on various channels really for the duration. I think as long as I had a television or cable, it was always on it's on some channel. So I would watch it whenever I could. I feel like I have seen every episode at least half a dozen times.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, you don't have them on DVD, though.
I have no DVDs of it. No, I don't have a collection.
So this is strictly from memory.
Yes, absolutely.
You can't just, you know, jump on the couch and relive some sort of episode that you just remembered, you know, something about, you know, Chrissy joining the Hare Krishnas or having a secret admirer or Furley moving in at the drop of a hat if you have it on DVD.
Sorry to interrupt, but it's amazing that the things that you mention are all just sort of swimming around in my mind as part of this collective kind of giant Three's Company memory. You know, I'll never forget Rama McGeesh, even though it's been a long time since I've seen that episode in particular. But yeah, anytime I can see it. Sometimes when I visit my parents, they have a satellite television.
I suggest you go back and listen and watch old episodes of the Super Friends, because the actor who played Rama McGeesh was a voiceover actor on that show. And then you can match it up once you watch both shows.
This is one of the great things about IMDb being this show, is that you just get it's just a wealth. You just see these faces of these character actors, and you're like, oh, I know this person from so many things.
And Three's Company was a great television show to showcase all these kind of character actors, these side bit actors, you know, supporting actors. Over the course of the 8 seasons, there's just a wealth of them, and they really span all of 70s television shows and into the 50s, 60s even, and even to this day, some of those supporting characters are still acting and in our faces.
You can draw straight lines between Bewitched and Three's Company, MASH and Three's Company, Cheers and Three's Company, through the bit players and the guest actors. And that's just, I mean, to name three, like, yeah, there's so many.
And that even goes into TV shows to this day.
You know? Yeah.
Well, let's get on with it. Season 5, Episode 7, Chrissy's Cousin. It aired December 16, 1980, directed by Dave Powers, written by George Burdett and Bud Grossman. Chrissy's cousin Cindy Snow moves into the apartment with Jack and Janet. Kieran, what did you think of Chrissy's Cousin?
Well, I think just plot-wise, it's an epoch marking episode. You know, it is the introduction of Cindy. My least favorite of the roommates, I think, but nevertheless, an important main player on the show, and she makes her grand entrance on this one.
I agree with you, with Cindy being the lowest ranked of all the cast members in the entire series, I have to say.
Yeah,
She failed to impress me. We'll give her a pass on these first few episodes, but I thought her run through the whole series, she never got better. in my eyes.
No, I remember it that way too. And this episode was interesting to me because I was watching it thinking like, is it the material? Is the material not quite strong enough for, you know, to really let her shine? I don't think it was that. I don't think it was the material. I just think that maybe it's a matter of having to follow Suzanne Somers and then, you know, subsequently being followed by, this terrible that I cannot, who played Terry?
Priscilla Barnes.
Oh, that's, how can I forget that? Anyway, she was, you know, very good too. So it's a tough sandwich.
Without any spoiler alerts, Cindy's run on the show was shorter than everyone else's.
Can I give the number of episodes? I actually looked this up.
Oh yeah, sure. I guess it's a spoiler alert.
Okay. Yes. So apologies for the spoiler. If I recall correctly at my last check, which I think was yesterday, if my reading comprehension is sound, it was, I think somewhere around 44 episodes. I don't know how many seasons.
Well, each season's got about between 22 and 25 episodes. So
yeah.
Really two seasons worth, but I think it spanned over three seasons. She would come in at the end, you know, like, hey, it's Cindy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you obviously think this is a very important episode, and it is. But did you like it as an episode on its own?
Not really. I felt like it was a bit of a reheat of a lot of the very same things. It even kind of trawled through a lot of the same setup. It felt pretty echoey to me. Jenny Lee Harrison, that's the name of the woman who played Cindy. Before we meet that character, they kind of run through this idea. There's the whole sort of getting the new roommate or getting a temporary roommate in sublet or whatever to take over for Chrissy. And, you know, there are some details that distracted me from this and I thought were funny and stuff and also puzzled me. But really, you know, they seem to be going over some of the same kind of arguments about, you know, who's to move in and what's appropriate. And what I thought was weird was after the big kerfuffle about them all living together in the first place and back in like 76 or 77 when Janet says, you know, it has to be platonic, what does Janet do? What does Jack do? They both bring their respective significant others into the apartment, presuming that they're just going to move in. They've got these boyfriend and girlfriend just appear. They've never been in any episodes, as far as I know. This is my boyfriend. This is my girlfriend. They're going to move in. And then, you know, it clashes from there.
Bringing their kind of boyfriend and girlfriend when originally it was supposed to be all platonic, and how they kind of shoehorned a boyfriend for Janet just for this episode. She never had one until she got married on the whole series.
Yeah, it's true. It's just like completely exists just for the sake of it. It was right in this boyfriend. Mind you, I was wondering about this. Maybe this is like old fashioned a sort of approach to the term boyfriend and girlfriend, like the way people used to say, we dated, which means like we went to dinner twice or went to a movie twice and there were dates. But, you know, that we didn't even kiss, you know, like that people would use those kinds of going on dates.
But Jack through the whole series goes out with a myriad of girls and he never refers to them as his girlfriend, except when
Linda.
Okay, there's Linda. Okay, I will say Linda, but all the other girls through the whole series were never his girlfriend until Cindy kicks them out in this episode. He calls Maxine his girlfriend.
Yes, Maxine. Right, yeah. Where'd she come from?
What do you mean, in the show? She was she just
parachuted in for this episode as sort of his girlfriend. Yeah, and then Bill was Janet's boyfriend in this, a very large man.
Who went on to star in Guiding Light.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was wondering, I looked up because I recognized him, and I was like...
Jordan Clark.
Okay. it was an episode of MASH that I remembered him from. Mm-hmm. And Maxine looked very familiar to me, but I couldn't place her from anything in particular. And this actually is a good way to mention Larry, of course, brings his girlfriend into the apartment. Was that also with the sort of pretense of having her move in as well?
Yeah, Jennifer.
And she was played by
Karen Austin.
Karen Austin, who was she was a regular on the first season of Night Court, I believe.
Oh wow! And, okay,
yeah,
that's another television show.
Yep, and I think she was also I think she was a regular on Night Court for at least a season. She was pre-Marky Post. She had that role. I don't know if she was an attorney, and I can't remember what else I knew her from, but
she was John Candy's wife in Summer Rental, which I've seen that almost half a dozen times.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go
ahead. Like Annette Bening in that. I think it wasn't Annette Bening the Aykroyd's wife in that.
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah. They were the kind of uppity urbanites.
The yuppies.
One thing is, this is her first of two appearances for her and for Furley's romantic interest,
right?
Barbara Stewart.
Barbara Stewart, right? Who also is familiar from numerous television performances, but also an appearance in the movie Bachelor Party, starring Tom Hanks and your favorite and mine, Adrian Zmed.
My favorite movie, by the way.
Really? Okay. Yeah, so yeah. You'll get immediately. She's the one who asks the immortal question to the waiter. Is this the footlong?
Yeah. And she's grabbing it.
Yes, she is.
At the strip joint.
Yeah, that's right. Nick.
Nick.
But I cannot, I'm actually ashamed that I remember so much about that movie.
Why?
Oh, it's just so completely 80s and completely wrong, but it's also just epic, and it's like it's just to see actually Tom Hanks in such a debauched scenario. And yet he's still kind of a squeaky clean guy. He's a total jerk and he's a total like goof off, but he doesn't transgress in any way in that film.
It's true.
Other than just to be a wild man, you know, doesn't do any drugs, doesn't have, you know, any illicit interactions with anybody.
There's a party scene where Adrian Zmed actually sings and a donkey snorts pills.
He sure does. The donkey does, yes. And so does Adrian Zmed. The sing, that is, yes.
Yes, yeah. Sing, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a great singer.
Yeah, yeah. O'Neill.
Album produced by Rick Derringer.
That's amazing. That I did not know.
Yeah. Another thing, you're talking about how they kind of broke from character or from the storyline itself by bringing these boyfriends and girlfriends in. Another thing was when Maxine steps out of the bathroom and she's in a bikini, mm-hmm. Jack holds her hand and is very affectionate with her in front of Furley.
Yes. Yeah.
Which he's not supposed to do.
Exactly. I thought, what happened to the whole ruse, the whole charade? And Furley doesn't make any shit, stupid, gay jokes in this episode. It's like that whole ruse about Jack being gay isn't even part of the plot in this episode, and Furley seems to have forgotten.
It's almost as if the writers forgot too, because they're just so mm-hmm. hell-bent on introducing and making sure America loved Cindy.
Yes, hell-bent is a very good way to describe the entire episode, I think. And it's funny because maybe I don't remember clearly, or maybe I'm thinking of later episodes when RF is a more lovable character. But in this one, he was really kind of playing the heavy and kind of he's kind of bullying the kids and being kind of a bit sinister and, you know, using his brother Bart as a, you know, as kind of a cudgel to get the rent out of them. And, you know, my brother Bart's going to kick you out of the building and stuff. you know, he would do that from time to time, but it was very, in this one, he seemed a lot more hostile than usual.
And I think that's because everybody, writers, directors, producers, and the cast themselves were on their, you know, their last nerve, or they were very nervous about continuing the show without Suzanne Somers, who yes. was very important to the success of the show. So mm-hmm. now they're stepping in this kind of unknown territory. Everybody's trying to do their best. And Jenny Lee Harrison was an unknown actress. And mm-hmm. I believe from, I can't remember where I read it, but she just auditioned for it. Cold audition, no experience. And she came into the audition, and I think she tripped somebody. There was some sort of klutzy incident that happened, and they worked it into her character, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, interesting. And this was purely an accident. This was not something that she set up or did. This was just something like a genuine pratfall.
Yeah, I think she just walked into the room and something happened. I cannot remember what, but that's how I think she won everyone over, and they kind of incorporated it into her character. And I believe she's like, you know, classic story. She's one of the last people to audition, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, yeah, it's interesting actually the way this episode kind of went down. I think I am, you know, forgetting about some of the you know, the way they shoehorned so much stuff into this episode. You know, you had the ubiquitous argument between Janet and Jack in the kitchen. You know, where I think seemed, you know, pretty sort of feet pitched. You know. You know, she accused him of being a male chauvinist pig in because of, you know, he was being so proprietary about her, you know, saying it's okay for him to, his girlfriend to move in, but it's not okay for her boyfriend to move in and all that kind of stuff. And of course, Janet was absolutely right. But it was all just ratcheted up so high.
They were hitting each other.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Like Jack was hitting Janet. Yeah.
Like, you know, you have this like total kind of, you know, kid who just fell off the turnip truck show up. I guess it really did throw Cindy into relief as a character, you know, because she is played as this kind of naif. Should they even give her kind of a little bit of a cornpone accent? Maybe that's, I don't know if that's because she's from the same town. She's from Fresno, and I guess, and that's where Cindy's, her cousin, Chrissy's from. And, she's got a much more twangy accent. Maybe, I don't know though, actually, if people in the Central Valley really do talk like that, that may be actually accurate. I don't want to say that it sounded phony.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I mean, it is important that, I think what they did right with this was they certainly allowed or set up the fact that Cindy was going to be the you know, a good foil for Jack's, for John Ritter's physical comedy.
Yeah, because, you know, they didn't want another dumb blonde set of jokes. You know, that mm-hmm. would just be retreading Chrissy, and then the inevitable comparison between the two, and mm-hmm. you'll lose if you go up against Suzanne Somers.
Yeah, and as much as Cindy's a klutz, they really, I think, immediately establish that Cindy is actually crafty. You know, when she sort of uses, and I couldn't tell quite whether she did it by accident, or whether it started off as a ploy immediately, but you know, she was using astrology to like get her way and playing sort of, it seemed like she was planting some seeds and playing some head games with people.
Which, and they never ever followed that up for the rest of her time on the show.
Oh, okay.
They never really did that. They never really mined the fact that she could be very manipulative.
It's amazing actually how manipulative she is. And even clearly the people who wrote it like must have at least known, had, you know, sort of a very vague idea of astrology, or looked it up, because I know very little about astrology. But when she says, you know, you're a Leo. And he's like, no, I'm a Virgo. And she's like, even better. Cause, says, yeah, Bill's a Virgo and Maxine is a Capricorn. And apparently that is a good match. So, and likewise, she does the whole thing about Furley being a Taurus, you know, and, you know, she gets in his good graces or whatever by talking about what a strong character he is, you know, and it's kind of like, how did she know to do that? It's pretty clever.
Yeah.
And then I was able to, of course, laugh at the fact that the way she gets rid of Bill and Maxine is to suggest they move in together, which they just swiftly agree is a good idea. And it's like the setup of a porno movie or something. Yeah. It's just like, there's a one bedroom apartment down the street. You guys could go share that. Hey, what are we waiting for? It's just like, I'm waiting for a wah-wah pedal, you know?
Like, yeah. I've known you for less than 10 minutes. So let's do it.
Yeah. 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 Just like, hey, that sounds like a perfect idea. Let's go cohabitate because we're the same sign, man.
And also I found it interesting that the end of the show on a Mr. Bill joke, which yes. is a character from SNL. So it was very hip, you know, even though it's hard to see that now, you know, when you look at Three's Company. But back then, you know, referencing Mr. Bill or referencing Saturday Night Live was a hip thing to do, hip thing for Three's Company to do.
And I honestly, with the exception of like Jack having a Beatles poster on his wall, like I don't remember a lot of pop culture references in that story world. And that threw me for a loop because they both Richard Klein and John Ritter seemed to break character a little bit during that bit. They were giggling and having a bit of fun. Yeah. And when he did the Mr. Bill thing, I came right out of left field, but I thought it was actually quite a funny kicker actually.
Yeah.
But it really seemed like they were messing around and maybe even improvising.
I felt they were improvising too. Or at least Richard Klein was.
Yeah, I think he might have started to wing it for fun. He had a mischievous look on his face. Yeah. I mean, he's just great. He's just such a fun character, and he was so good at it.
So all in all, Kieran, thumbs up for Chrissy's cousin.
Oh boy, I guess I can't do just like just right in the middle. Eh? I suppose I would give it a very unenthusiastic thumbs up because it does bring Cindy into the picture in as bombastic a way as possible, and ends up with Jack getting smashed in the head and hit with a tennis racket and hit with all sorts of objects numerous times.
I would love to see you give me an unenthusiastic thumbs up. How does that even look like?
Oh, like kind of like a politician would give a thumbs up to a crowd of people while doing like a photo op somewhere. The thumb is barely extended. It's kind of almost like a fist, with the thumb kind of barely protruding from the fists.
So really a fist. You give this episode a fist.
Yeah. And not a raised fist, not like a right on raised fist.
No,
just kind of a, I think what I give it? I give it that like come see, come saw hand gesture.
Okay. I got it.
Yeah.
Well, come back next week, Kieran. Let's keep talking about Three's Company.
I would love to. Thanks, Danko.